As you know, it's important to me that the supplements I recommend and use are of the highest quality. That's why I stock the Protocol for Life Balance product line in my online dispensary, drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research, including a suite of supplements supporting your cardiovascular health, Clinical Cardio 6, Ubiquinol, and K2, MK7, and D3. This collection offers a powerful combination of targeted nutrients and botanicals that are known to promote optimal cardiovascular health by supporting healthy blood pressure, arterial flexibility, cellular energy production, neutralization of free radicals, protection against oxidative stress, and promotion of healthy vascular structures. For more information and to order, just go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance is an A-rated GMP manufacturer of premium dietary supplements. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. A little bit of a departure because we often talk about vitamins, supplements, nutrition, high-tech medicine. But here we're talking a little bit about psychology, and to some extent where it overlaps with spirituality. The book is Toxic Productivity, something that many of us are prey to. I fess up, yours truly. I'm a very hard-driving professional. I try to accomplish a lot in my professional career, maybe a little bit overreaching in terms of things I've been involved with. And so this podcast is a tonic to certain of my tendencies and hopefully to some of yours. Our guest is the author of Toxic Productivity, Reclaim Your Time and Emotional Energy in a World That Always Demands More. She's Isra Nasir, N-A-S-I-R. She's got a website at isranasir.com. You also have an active practice here in New York City, right? You're a fellow New Yorker.
I am in New York. I work for another practice, not on my own. But yes, I do see clients.
Indeed. But, of course, New York, you encounter very few people who actually experience toxic productivity, right? I mean, like, New York is totally laid back kind of place.
Yes, absolutely. This book is irrelevant in this city.
Indeed. You're right in the cauldron here of toxic productivity. And so you should have a very well-subscribed practice. So let's talk a little bit about some strategies, specific strategies for news people can use for alleviating their toxic productivity. So is delegating or maybe relinquishing some of the things that you preside over a useful strategy to deal with toxic productivity?
So delegating or letting go of some control is a behavioral thing that we can do. I think what happens, though, with most people who struggle with toxic productivity and just like dive into delegation, what happens is very quickly they stop doing it. And why? Because you don't really understand the roots of what's going on, like what is preventing you from delegation. So logically, you're like, oh, well, I know this more.
So what you're saying is, mechanically you can delegate, but then it doesn't feel good. So you immediately revert to your previous control freak habits.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So I think it's important to kind of look at the emotion. So if somebody is trying to figure out like, hey, how can I stop being so, over-functioning all the time? I think the first thing you want to do is you want to build some emotional awareness and understand what that gives you. Doing things yourself, is that giving you more status within your family unit? Is that giving you more power? Is it like what are you getting out of it? And so that requires some self-reflection. Another thing that we can kind of do to really understand these emotions is do an emotional audit. So looking back at the last 3 weeks, all of the things you said yes to and took on, things you prevented from letting go, right? Things you were like, whatever, I'll just do it myself. And really analyzing how you felt before, after, and during. Because you'll notice that there's a lot of things you do that make you feel bad. And there's a lot of things you do that somebody else could have done, but you're doing them like, why am I doing this? So this kind of audit exercise is really important. And asking yourself really difficult questions, like, why do I keep doing this? Do I have to be the one who's doing it? What would happen if I didn't do it? Right? And you have to talk yourself through this. And it is a very enlightening exercise. I know it sounds like, what am I going to get out of doing something like this? Like, I can see people kind of pushing back against it. But genuinely, it's a very enlightening exercise, because when we are living in autopilot in a busy life, we have children, we have elderly parents, we have friends, jobs, side hustles. What happens is we just have no connection to why we're doing things. And we forget our patterns. And when you look at an audit, right staring at you, pen and paper, you will see your patterns. It's hard to ignore the patterns. And then you can kind of start the questioning.
How can people create kind of a refuge within their busy schedules, creating more space and time that are not necessarily goal-oriented or achievement-oriented? Are there ways of introducing that gradually?
Absolutely. So one of the big myths we believe is that we have to do something for a very long time for it to have an impact. So people believe that they have to do like 10-minute meditations or a 40-minute workout. But the truth is, you can actually start small, incrementally, and it still sometimes has a good enough impact, right? So in order to create some pockets of time, the first thing you have to do is you have to undercommit. If you are an overcommitted person, and I said, hey, Dr. Hoffman, like, you should take an improv class just for fun, you would say, absolutely not. I'm too busy. So the first step is to undercommit. Reflect on all of your commitments, see if you can take something out so you can create some space. And then once you've created space, add something in there that genuinely has no connection to anything that you do. It cannot be running a marathon, because that's competitive.
Something that you can't put on Facebook or X, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, I took an improv class earlier this summer. I am not an actor. I have no desire to do it. I was not even interested in getting better. I didn't even try. But I was there every week for 10 weeks. And it was play and creative, and it was fun. And I think that's important.
And it was also something that's kind of... For people who want a really controlled experience, it's kind of the opposite of that. It's like spontaneity and, you know, basically kind of a reversion to childhood play.
Yeah. So I feel like it's really, just start thinking about, and if you can't do something that's like once a week, a commitment like that, see if you can take up a hobby that you can showcase, like puzzles, needlepoint, quilting, like, I don't know, miniature cars, like whatever, right? Sometimes I think the things that people used to do long ago, it made sense that they did that because they had such a benefit, and modern life has just removed all of it. Like, we used to have quilting circles back in the day. Like, people would sit together and quilt or circles. People would like we had all of these mindful activities that were just a part of our day.
Yeah.
And all of that is gone now.
But some people, modern people, would consider some of these things boring or repetitious. And, you know, we fill all our time because in downtime, we have immediate access to our phones or our iPads or our computers, and we can immediately fill our time with all kinds of input. And I got to say that especially during this the lead up to this heated presidential election, it's pretty exhausting. It's exhausting.
Absolutely. It's exhausting at a spiritual level because you're receiving so much information about the world that you can't do anything about. So it's very disempowering. It's also exhausting at a physiological neural level because your brain is like processing every 7 seconds, right? That's the average span that people spend on a screen on their phone. So within 7 seconds, we swipe. Doesn't matter where we are, news, a TikTok, Instagram, whatever. And so every 7 seconds, your brain is processing new information. So it's like tiring in that way as well.
So I got to admit, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. How do you disrupt the perfectionism circuit? Because it's just got to be just right. I mean, like, you know, doing a podcast, for example, you know, it's just got to hit exactly the right note. Or when I do my solo radio program, every feature has to be absolutely crystalline, clear and, you know, beautifully prepared. Okay, so in that realm, yeah, but when it extends to many other aspects of life, how do you break into that?
Some things do require, like, literally us going above and beyond, and I think it's important to show up in that way. But if you are providing above and beyond to every domain of your life, you're going to be subpar in every domain of your life. So I like to think about it like that. Like, if your radio show is live, this podcast is, you know, you have to be on it, absolutely. But in other parts of your life, see if you can commit to good enough goals. Find a way to commit to yourself to be just good enough, right? Like, literally set that goal for yourself. Like, I'm going to take this new thing on and I'm just going to be just good enough at it. And it's okay. Allow yourself to watch other people do what you could have done better at home or in your front. So if you know you're going to plan the most kick-ass July 4th barbecue, somebody else do it. And you don't get to interfere. And so you know what that does is it's like neuroplasticity. It helps you experience the lack of perfectionism in your mind.
Right.
And then you realize that the world doesn't end. It's not that big of a threat. So the more you expose yourself to it, the less scary it becomes. And that way you can really hone in on being like very high performing in the place that does require you to be.
In your book, do you look at some of the neuroscience that underlies this, you know, levels of dopamine, levels of cortisol, the consequences to the nervous system and the body of this type of toxic productivity? Was that the investigations you undertook?
I did. It's very briefly mentioned in the book because the book is more emotional regulation, but that stuff is very interesting to me. So I actually do talk a lot about nervous system regulation and dopamine circuits when I talk about productivity. And I think there is something to be said about training and retraining your brain. Our habits train our brain, and the way we kind of get this like instant gratification of achievement and the dopamine circuit that we feel is a very real thing. And so I think that's why I think like the rest chapter includes a whole section on embracing the slow life. And I'm a really big fan of that because, you know, the slow life doesn't mean just doing things slowly. What it actually means is you're delaying the dopamine gratification circuit, which has become totally fried right now because of apps, right? Like we're scrolling, getting dopamine, right? Fast food, getting a really fast hit of everything. And so embracing the slow life helps you expand that a little bit. Embracing the slow life also keeps your nervous system regulated. Eating mindfully keeps your nervous system down, right? Eating very rapidly while doing 10 other things will dysregulate you. And having a slow morning versus getting up and jumping into doing something. So I do think that that's a really important thing. And at a physiological level, it can help us if we change these habits.
You know, cross-culturally, we can look at what are called the blue zones and the way of life in some of these supposed Edens, because there actually is some question as to whether the blue zones truly exist because of sometimes faulty record-keeping. They say there are a lot of centenarians, but their record-keeping is a little shady in some cases. But nonetheless, there are parts of the world where they're virtually like the idealized Shangri-La in terms of pace of life. What lessons can we derive from looking at those cultures?
I think most of those cultures eat very mindfully, and that's a really important thing. We don't eat mindfully here at all. I mean, when I was in like knee deep in toxic productivity, I would skip food all the time because I had stuff to do. It was too much to walk down and get a salad. And even if I was eating, like I was eating at my desk, like you're just so disconnected. Now we eat while watching TV. But those cultures eat very mindfully. And so they consume less, they are more satiated, they are more connected with the food that they're eating. And I think that changes a lot of your experience. I think that those cultures are also very community driven, right? And within the toxic productivity mindset, one of the first things you're going to start doing is you will start bailing on your friends. You're going to say, oh, I'm busy, I'm working, I can't come, I just have to finish this, right? Like, you see this all the time, like people bail on their friends and that erodes your community. And so you become lonelier. And I mean, New York is the most like heavy population density spot but people are lonely here because mm-hmm. nobody time for each other, right? And that really impacts your health.
Right. And then the sort of that the multi-generational family situation where the generations mingle, they help each other. That may be, at least in part, a key to a less toxic productivity lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I come from a South Asian background and intergenerational families are very common. And I see the way my cousins live back in Pakistan and they have so much access to support and community and they learn from the different, like my grandmother's teaching my cousin's stuff and my younger cousins teaching my uncles and aunts stuff. Like, it's just like this living that is so robust, but I didn't grow up in that. So I was always watching this from the outside. And always feeling like, oh, like, you know, like my family is just my nuclear family, right? And it does make a difference. I think we wouldn't have this much elder loneliness if we had a little bit more of a generational family system.
But in some ways, we consider our ancestors slow and backward, and we're so modern and progressive and supposedly freed from these seeming constraints, which actually lend a lot of cultural support and emotional support prevent us from embarking in toxic productivity.
Yeah.
You in the book, you refer to something called the sandcastle lesson. What's that about?
The sandcastle lesson is an incident that happened in my life. And it was really embarrassing to even write about, but I thought it was helpful. So I went on an unplugged vacation with my husband and we both were, you know, we're both overachieving, high performing people. So we were just like, ugh, like we must go and take a break. So we go on this like intentionally unplugged vacation where nothing has been booked, which is very hard for my husband. Like he
unstructured.
Yeah. He must have like reservations booked and things like that. So we were like, no, let's practice.
Activities, tours, you know. Yeah.
Yes. We get there and he's relaxing on the beach and my mind is now just running. Now I'm like, wait, I should be writing. I should have done this. I need to write here because I'm in this beautiful place. Like, am I even a good writer if I can't come up with something here? And so I'm beating myself up over not writing something. And even though the intention was to be unplugged. And over time, like he got up, went off to, you know, get in the water and started making a sandcastle. And then he called me over to make it with him. And I realized that I was 32 at that time. I realized I had never done that. Like I never just chilled. And because every time I go to the beach, I'm like, I must be reading. I must be writing. I must be listening to a podcast. Right. And we just sat there and we like made a sandcastle and it was bad. And we got, you know, it got flooded and then we made it again. And it was just so fun. Like time passed by. I didn't even realize it. And you know, I think being present is really transformative.
And the nice thing about the sandcastle is it's the very essence of something transitory and not a lasting monument to one's personal achievement. It, you know, washes away. It is very much in the moment. I think that's a great metaphor. Then there's this notion of the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset. That's you know kind of a popular term. How does that fit into toxic productivity?
So, you know, the scarcity mindset feeds into the toxic productivity mindset because when things feel scarce, you're more likely to overdo so you get it right away, right? Because it's going to be gone. And you can think about this as a fixed versus growth mindset as well, right? Where the fixed mindset is like the scarcity mindset. But the way it operates is, and we have this in our culture, everything feels urgent and scarce. Like if you don't buy now, you'll miss out. If you don't watch now, you're behind from cultural conversations, right? There's a lot of urgency in our culture. And urgency tells us that things are finite. Resources are finite. Opportunities are finite. Time is finite. Like you have to
grab it while you can.
Have it while you can. Like you have to buy a house before you're 35. You have to have your kids before you're 30. Like you have to be in a relationship. Like you have all of these shoulds that are on this timeline and everyone's telling you to do it now. And so that makes stopping very scary. that makes being still very scary, because now you're like, wait, everybody else is moving ahead and I'm not. And so then you go get caught in this loop of I should, constantly overdoing, overcommitting. But again, these are not your goals. These are goals you have inherited from a society that is telling you how to live. And so, yeah, you don't feel good. You don't feel happy, right? And I work with so many people who are just so successful, but so disillusioned in life, right? Because many of them didn't even want to pursue the careers they're in. But they had to, because everybody else was doing it.
Yeah. And what about the effect of gratitude, of sort of taking stock in what it is you have and appreciating that rather than aspiring to some new higher plane of achievement?
A lot of times people think that gratitude is like the opposite of ambition. But what I see it as is it helps you balance being content and ambitious. So you can be both things at the same time. Gratitude actually helps you realize how far you've come so that you can have an accurate representation of who you are. Because toxic productivity will not recognize what you've done. So you always are trapped in a perpetual inadequacy. And so nothing feels good enough. But if you can be grateful for the things you have, you can actually realize that you have come a far way. You have made progress. And that eases the pressure. It might not make you less ambitious, and that doesn't have to be the goal, but it takes the pressure off.
And finally, what was the biggest surprise that came to you out of researching and writing toxic productivity? Did some of your inquiries lead you to challenge some of your preconceptions?
This is a great question and one I haven't been asked before. Let me think about this. So going in, I definitely had a lot of ideas that were supported by the research. I think the thing that I had to really confront myself with and contend with is that this is not something that just goes away. And I think that's why I intentionally talk about it, because in my own writings, I realized that I would have cycles of toxic productivity. I would come out of it, I'd manage it. And so I want to share that in the beginning, I thought that that was a very disempowering.
Right. Like, it's a humbling admission for the writer of a popular self-help book is that, you know, 10 ways of overcoming toxic productivity. This is a recipe for escaping the cycle of toxic productivity. And yet you're humbled by the recognition that it's pretty tenacious, and it involves this kind of a lifetime of work and commitment.
Exactly. And so I realized that this was not just a thing, but I realized that this is a lifestyle. And so in changing all of our overall habits, it doesn't just change your relationship to how you feel about yourself. It actually changes the quality of your life. That was something that I developed as I continued to learn and explore, like, okay, well, like, if it never really goes away, like, what does all of this even mean? And I realized that when we create a series of habits, not only does it change how much you take on or what you do, it changes the quality of your life, because it changes the quality of your relationships. It changes the quality of your intention, your awareness. And so you just become so much more present in life, which was not what I thought I would get at the end. Well, I thought I was going to get at like a series of good habits that people build.
Exactly. A prescription for a non-toxic lifestyle that is infallible. Okay, so this is great stuff. And this is a great corrective, I think, to a lot of the stuff that I put out there, because people hang on my words here about every single supplement they should take, their exercise regimen, their sleep regimen. It can be pretty overpowering. So I think we need to take a look at our susceptibility to toxic productivity in our lives. And your book provides some great insights. I recommend it highly for our listeners. Available from the usual sources, Toxic Productivity, Reclaim Your Time and Emotional Energy in a World That Always Demands More. Good title.
Thank you,
Isra Nasir, N-A-S-I-R. You can find her at isranasir.com, correct? And or Google Toxic Productivity. Really enjoyed talking to you. both on behalf of my listeners and on a personal level, because your book is a hopeful corrective to some of my more pathological tendencies in this realm. I'm working on it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And, you know, we're all working on it.
Yeah, we're all works in progress, for sure. Thank you so much. We really enjoyed talking to you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.